Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
The debate.
And welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, millions of men, women, and especially children are on the brink of starvation in Yemen, all due to preventable causes. The United Nations has said that Yemen is the most pressing humanitarian crisis in the world. This is the Saudi regime, along with its regional allies, and support from some Western countries continue to bombard the poorest country in the region. Yemeni blood is on the hands of many, but what will be done about it, and how can the suffering be stopped?
The humanitarian crisis in Yemen has been exacerbated by the incessant war and siege over the past 6 years. The executive director of the World Food Program, David Beasley, confirmed that the number of people facing the second highest level of food insecurity will increase from 3.6 million to 5 million in the first half of 2021.
There is indeed a humanitarian catastrophe, and if aid arrives, it goes to other places, and 70% of it goes to United Nations organizations to cover operational expenses. The other side must stop the blockade completely, because it affects Yemen in the medical, educational, and food sectors. So we think the focus should be on the root cause of the problem, which is the siege on Yemeni people.
Beasley called on the international community not to abandon the millions of families who are in severe need of aid. Millions of people are on the brink of a new famine as the UN's Yemen response faces historic shortfalls. $1.5 billion is what the donor governments contributed, while the UN says it needs $3.2 billion to avert the crisis.
Those who provide aid, such as the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and America, have failed and did not abide by their pledges they made. They spent more than these sums to buy weapons, but they do not help Yemenis as they claim, which confirms the authenticity of the United Nations reports that famine is on the rise in Yemen.
The coronavirus pandemic, along with the funding crunch, has forced dozens of aid agencies and organizations working in Yemen to scale back their assistance. Some of them even had to give up their programs entirely, which has deteriorated the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, according to the UN. Famine can still be prevented if the international community wakes up to take serious action to save the lives of millions in Yemen, including women and the children. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Hossein Al-Bakhati, Yemeni activist and political commentator out of Sana'a, and Eli Joseph James, a radio host and political commentator out of Chicago. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start it off in Sana'a. Hossein, we've been hearing about the devastating effects of the Saudi onslaught on Yemen for years now, especially regarding children and starvation. Is the international community unable to stop this, or is it choosing not to address this, and why, if that's the case?
Of course, the international community, they can stop this aggression against Yemen and war and blockade and constant Saudi attack on Yemen main infrastructure by actually pinpointing who is the one responsible for this war on Yemen. We remember that in all UN statement or UN envoy to Yemen, either the British one or Mr. Griffith, they haven't actually mentioned Saudi Arabia as a part of this war, or United Arab Emirates, or all the countries that supported this war, like United States, France, and the UK. They call it as a civil war, and this actually they want to deceive and mislead the international media, and to deceive as well the international community, because when there are 17 countries involved in this war, they force blockade on Yemen. If you call it a civil war, this means that you actually not taking the responsibility from Saudi Arabia and other countries. And as well, we remember that United Nations actually has appointed Saudi as a member of the Human Rights Council in Geneva during the war in Yemen, and they have removed Saudi Arabia twice from a list for killing children, because as the UN Security General at that time, I believe was Ban Ki-moon, he said because of pressure from Saudi Arabia that they will cut all the aid to the United Nations if the United Nations will not take Saudi name. This means that for Saudi Arabia, this is a green light that they can continue the war against Yemen. They can continue the blockade. As you mentioned in your report, the World Food Program, they said 5 million people in the coming month will actually have food insecurity. There are 17 million, according to United Nations Agency and some NGOs, that 17 million Yemenis are in urgent need of aid. And with all that, with the coronavirus and the blockade, I believe, and it's clearly, as the United Nations have said before, is one of the worst humanitarian disaster in
right.
the world. But still, they okay. are not saying who is behind this, because before we haven't had any of this illness or this food insecurity.
Well, let me cross over to Eli in Chicago. Now, for more than 3 years, Saudi Arabia has implemented that illegal blockade that our other guests have been talking about on Yemen, blocking roads, ports, and air traffic, making getting in basic necessities very difficult. So all of these things are man-made. Where's the outcry and where's the pressure on changing this reality in order to at least get the basic necessities to these individuals? Millions and millions of people are on the verge of starvation.
Well, there is none. There should be, worldwide, there should be an outcry, but all you get is a posturing, hand-wringing from the politicians of virtually every country except from those countries that are most affected. This is, to me, an exact repeat of what the Israelis have been doing to the Palestinian people for, well, since 1945 and even before, that the outcry is controlled by the mass media of the international corporations, which have no real interest in the suffering and the how should I put it, the well-being of the affected peoples. But what they do are interested in is maintaining supply of arms, the supply of materials to the people that they do business with. And apparently the Yemen people are not sufficiently good customers for the international community for them to be concerned about. This is a humanitarian crisis that reeks to high heaven and also down to hell, because the United Nations could be doing something, but they're not. Now, my understanding is that this began in 2015 when a Saudi-led coalition began bombing Houthi rebels who had forced Yemen's president Hadi into exile. So as far as I'm concerned, this started out as a civil war, your other guests could correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the Saudis have no business getting involved in internal affairs of Yemen. That's my position on this.
Well, on the one hand, UN continually warns about the danger of the situation in Yemen. On the other hand, UN member countries, even some of those on the Security Council, continue to sell weapons to Saudi Arabia, the regime mainly responsible for the onslaught on Yemen, with, of course, other regional countries. So then what does it mean? Can the UN be counted on or cannot? And on the other hand, how can we expect these countries to help then improve the situation in Yemen?
I think the involvement of these countries like United Kingdom, France, and especially the United States, is one of the main goal of the start of this war. We've seen that it's not all about bringing Hadi or the, they call the legitimate government to Yemen. We've seen that what the United Arab Emirates is doing in south of Yemen. They have created militia and group. They have actually made ties with Al-Qaeda and ISIS to fight Sana'a or to fight Ansar al-Houthi, and those groups actually do not recognize Hadi government, and they have fought several times in the south, and that's one of the main goals of the war, to control and secure the shipping line in Bab al-Mandeb and in Socotra Island. And the other goal is to sell more weapons to Saudi Arabia. Those three Western countries actually are making billions of dollars in profit from this war. According to the Independent, they think about 1 year or 2 years ago, they said the United Kingdom has increased its sales of weapons to 500%. And as well, during Obama administration, the war started on Yemen with the green light from the United States. And they have sold the highest rate of weapons to Saudi Arabia in the history of the United States. That's why I think if this country actually still making profit, they are not going to stop this war. They will continue using the United Nations and the UN Security Council to only actually blame Sana'a. As
so
every
Hussein,
time
let
Sana'a
me just jump in here.
Any military
so Hussein,
installation.
Let,
or
Hussein, let me just jump in here.
Yeah.
So are you saying, for example, that the United States support for the Saudis in this onslaught against the Yemenis, it's all economic? Is it because of the billions of money that Washington get and London gets from selling weapons? Is that the only reason that they are supporting the Saudis in this onslaught? Or tell me about what you think on that side of things.
Yes, this is one of the main reason, and the other reason is, as I mentioned, is to control and secure the Bab al-Mandeb Strait, is one of the most important shipping line in the world, and Socotra Island, it's situated in one important area south of Yemen, and to control ports and airports, especially in Aden and El Mahra, and this actually gives the United States and the Zionist state a foot or a present in those area, because when the revolution in Yemen has took place in 21st of September 2014, the United States didn't like that, because here Houthi and as well the government here now in Sana'a are anti-United States foreign policy, and as well they are against the occupation of Palestine and against the Zionist state of Israel. All that actually is what has actually given the green light to Saudi Arabia to impose and to start this war. And I just want to add one thing. We've seen many times lately in the media that if Biden will come into power, maybe he will stop the war, because he has made many, many promises during his campaign. But I think this is a big lie, because the United States have the same policy. It doesn't matter who is in control of the White House, but at least actually Trump, he was honest with all his promises during his campaign. He has actually implemented those promises. But Biden, I'm sure that he will continue selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. And the war started during Obama, who was given a peace, the Nobel Peace Prize during his administration. This actually shows the goal is economic goal to sell more weapons, and as well to secure and to control Yemen, because the strategic place where Yemen lies is actually given an interest for the United States and other countries.
Well, Eli, according to the UN, at least half of the country of Yemen is on the brink of starvation, as I said earlier, this due to man-made causes. Your take on this tragedy and what can be done in order to change this around?
Well, the UN strategy is very much the same as Israeli strategy, because the Rothschild banking family created the United Nations and created the Israeli state shortly after creating the United Nations. So whatever happens in the Middle East is essentially the policy of the banking firm of Rothschild and Company, who essentially control all banking operations in the entire world, with the exception of some Muslim countries. They even control the economic operations of communist countries. So the overall strategy in the Middle East of the Rothschilds is to destabilize every single country within the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, including Iraq, Iran, what have you. Everything that the Israelis claim for themselves under their false claim that they are the people who have been donated by God, that whole area from the Tigris-Euphrates all the way to the river of Egypt. But that's false. They are not the people to whom God donated that territory to. That false claim is what created the Zionist state. So ever since they created the Zionist state, they have been using this tactic of pitting one Middle East country against the other. And in fact, Iran has become the new Nazis of the world. Once they got done with Nazi Germany, now they blame everything on Iran. That's why they don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. They don't want Iran to have everything, anything. They want to destroy your country just like they destroyed Germany. And they're using constant chaos in the Middle East, pitting one Arab nation against another Arab nation, against your nation, against et cetera, et cetera. This is all that they're doing. And the United Nations is not going to end it because the United Nations are mere puppets of the Rothschilds. Over to you.
All right. Well, Hossein, the Yemeni people have fought back as best they could against the blockade on its country and the all-out war being waged against them by the Saudis and Emiratis. Now, this was a war that Riyadh said would be over in weeks, and now it has been more than 5 years. What happened? How could Riyadh miscalculate to this degree?
Actually, they actually miscalculated. They might have done this actually on purpose, because at the beginning of the war, they blamed Iran for, as they say, sending all these weapons to Sana'a forces. And after 3 weeks of blockade and constant bombardment, we've seen that the spokesperson of the coalition, the previous one, Mr. Al-Asiri, he said that they have destroyed 85 to 90% of the capacity of weapons that Sana'a forces has, but after that, it's clearly was actually the opposite. And this actually proves that there is no weapons coming from Iran, because this blockade, responsible for not allowing for food and medicine to come to Yemen, all ships that arrive to Yemen are searched by the United Nations, are searched by Saudi Arabia, by the coalition, by American forces in the region. So how can Iran smuggle weapons? That's why the miscalculation started from that. But Saudi Arabia used this excuse just to get an attention from countries like the United States and the United Kingdom and others, to get the full support, because they want the international community to believe that there is a real present for Iran in Yemen. But to be honest with you, there is no present. Yemen has a huge amount of weapons. They had about 600 ballistic missiles. They have developed new weapons like drones and cruise missiles. And according to the army spokesperson here in Sana'a, he said yesterday that Saudi Arabia are in the final stage of losing this war, and the Yemenis actually has not started to attack and target like airport in Najran and Jizan and Asir, south of Saudi Arabia, only because Saudi Arabia is keeping targeting Sana'a airport and other airports and keeping this blockade. And I just want to mention that I expect in the coming days or weeks that Saudi will continue to target Sana'a airport, because we have seen in their media in the last 72 hours that they claim that Sana'a airport is used as a weapons base for the Sana'a forces. And this is actually so silly, because you Sana'a forces will leave all the country, will leave all the mountains they have, all the hills, all this huge empty space to use the Sana'a International Airport. But because this airport is the last lifeline for Yemenis, and actually the exclusive client for this airport is the United Nations. But they haven't said anything when Saudi have targeted the airport on last Friday. That's why I believe Saudi now want to close this airport totally, even for the United Nations. But I believe if this will be done, then the Yemeni forces will take a huge step, and they will target Saudi Arabia main infrastructure, and they will target like a large airport either in Jeddah or in Abu Dhabi or Dubai or Riyadh, because they always say after any attack that if Saudi will stop and lift the blockade, we will stop. So the one responsible for the war to continue is Saudi Arabia and all the country behind it.
Well, Eli, what is the goal of Saudi Arabia now with this onslaught and blockade continuing? Does Riyadh just want to starve and torture the Yemeni nation to death?
It appears that way. But the reality is, here in the West, those of us who are savvy to the Zionist occupation of the entire Middle East and the Zionist occupation of virtually the entire world, is that they need to make boogeymen, a boogeyman. So they've made a boogeyman of Yemen, and they have no consideration, concern. They have no humanitarian concern whatsoever for the people of Yemen. And as long as the people of Yemen are caught in the middle of this game where the nation of Saudi Arabia is being dangled by the Israeli puppeteer to do the bidding of the Israelis, because as your guest pointed out, they have all these strategic operations going on that the Israelis want. Number one, the Israelis want to destabilize the Middle East for their own purposes, and they create strife among different Muslim groups to fight amongst themselves. They created the Wahhabi sect. The Rothschilds actually created the Wahhabi sect. I don't know if your listeners are aware of that. And they have been using the Wahhabi sect, and Saudis were instrumental in supporting the Wahhabis against other Islamic religions.
Okay.
So this has been ongoing for, several hundred years. Several hundred years. Back to you.
Hossein, 1 minute. What is it going to take to bring this onslaught on Yemen to an end?
I think the only just that Saudi Arabia and United States and other countries back in Saudi Arabia, they only recognize the power and the one who is strong in this war. And I think if the Yemeni army will keep targeting Saudi main infrastructure, especially the oil field, this is where it actually hit and hurt Saudi Arabia, because they depend 100% on oil to buy all these weapons, and as well to buy the United Nations and United States and all that. So if they do that, they can as well hurt the economy of the United States and UK and other countries. And I believe if they continue this type of attack, if they can actually stop Saudi from exporting oil, I believe that this war going to end. And we remember just about maybe 1 week ago, after the attack on Aramco in Jeddah, United Kingdom has sent some troops to Saudi Arabia, as they say, to protect the power and the oil field in Saudi Arabia. This means those targets actually going to hurt those countries who selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. And
okay,
this decision actually should be taken by Sana'a, and they have as well responsibility to do so.
All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us on this debate. Out of Sana'a, Hossein Al-Bakhati, Yemeni activist and political commentator. Out of Chicago, Eli Joseph James, radio host and political commentator. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thank you so much for joining us.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan letter C, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. And they are those who, if we give them authority in the land, establish prayer and give zakah, and enjoin what is right and forbid what is wrong. And to Allah belongs the outcome of all matters.
So, dear listeners, we were talking about the 41st verse of this chapter. الَّذِينَ إِن مَكَّنَّاهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ أَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَآتَوُوا الزَّكَاةَ وَأَمَرُوا بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنَهَوْا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَلِلَّهِ عَاقِبَةُ الْأُمُورِ. Those who, if we establish them in the land, they perform prayer, they pay the alms, and enjoin good and forbid evil, and unto Allah belongs the end of all affairs. So we said that this verse is continuing the interpretation upon the friends of Allah, whom have been promised the help of the Almighty Allah in the previous verse, where it said, وَلَيَنْصُرَنَّ اللَّهُ مَنْ يَنْصُرُهُ. Surely Allah will support and help those who help Him and those who help Almighty Allah's cause. Since this verse, the verse under discussion, is talking about the holy war, although we have formerly discussed about this important subject, but regarding the these verses, and perhaps the first group of the verses by which the permission of holy war was issued for Muslims, and their content, points out the philosophy of this commandment, the commandment of holy war, it seems necessary that we speak about this topic a little bit again. The first is the holy struggle of the oppressed against the cruel oppressors. This is a certain natural right for them, and the intellect approves this. The intellect confirms that those who are oppressed should not accept injustice. They must rise and they must protest. They must equip themselves with weapons. They must remove the oppressors and try to cut off their polluted hands from their rights. Another kind of war is the holy struggle against false deities who intend to wipe out the name of the Almighty Allah from the hearts and to destroy the temples which are among the centers of the people's awareness.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, this group should also be opposed so that they cannot efface the remembrances of the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from the minds. And that's why they are doing their best, because they are trying to stupefy people in order to make them slaves and servants for themselves. They try and do their best to make people forget about the Almighty Allah, forget about their servanthood in front of the Almighty Allah, and try to make them servants for themselves by conquering their minds and their hearts. This matter is also noteworthy. The destroying temples and mosques is not only this action that they ruin them by means of destruction and by powerful machines, but it is possible that they work indirectly and prepare some evil amusing things and maybe sometimes ill propagations that they cause to divert common people from temples and mosques. And as a result, these sacred places may be practically turned into some ruins, although they physically remain, but they are removed from the hearts and minds of the people. So by what was said, the answer of some objectors is made clear. Those who say, why has Islam allowed Muslims to gain their goals by attaching force and war? Why do they not work for the Islamic aims by applying logic? I have a question. Is it possible that merely by using reasoning and logical statements, these oppressed people stand against the cruel tyrants who expel them from their houses, who confiscate their properties, who observe no law and understand no logic under the pretext that the oppressed say there is no God but Allah? Is it possible even logic and intellect suggest that the oppressed should have the necessary equipments to stand against those tyrants, those cruel tyrants? Can these mad and illogical oppressors be faced without the language of weapon? There are some remaining points regarding this important verse, dear listeners. We will, inshallah, continue to talk about them in the later programs. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Around the World with Reporters.
The Islamic Republic of Iran currently has the highest blood donation rate in the Eastern Mediterranean region, and out of almost 10 million donation units in this region, over 2 million is by the Iranians. These days, a campaign is launched in Tehran to collect blood from athletes to encourage other people to donate their blood. The campaign is being promoted by Sports Society of Basij in collaboration with the country's blood transfusion organization.
We have organized this event to give the opportunity to athletes and other people to donate their blood to improve the level of blood banks in the country.
Famous sportsmen also took part to convince ordinary people to be part of the move as well.
I am here today to donate my blood because it's a must for everyone to help the patients. Our country needs our blood as the bank reservoirs are running low. I call on my fellow countrymen to come and help and save lives.
I want to be part of this campaign to do the least I can do for those who need blood. This can also improve the health in our country. As the body of athletes is strong, their blood is of a better quality. I ask all the athletes to show up and assist.
Studies showed that the plasma taken from the recovered people can be used in treating the coronavirus patients. While blood donation in many countries still depends on replacement or paid donors, Iran is the first country in the region that has enjoyed voluntary blood donation by 100% since 2007. Human Abedi, Tehran.
The humanitarian crisis in Yemen has been exacerbated by the incessant war and siege over the past 6 years. The executive director of the World Food Program, David Beasley, confirmed that the number of people facing the second highest level of food insecurity will increase from 3.6 million to 5 million in the first half of 2021.
There is indeed a humanitarian catastrophe, and if aid arrives, it goes to other places, and 70% of it goes to United Nations organizations to cover operational expenses. The other side must stop the blockade completely, because it affects Yemen in the medical, educational, and food sectors. So we think the focus should be on the root cause of the problem, which is the siege on Yemeni people.
Beasley called on the international community not to abandon the millions of families who are in severe need of aid. Millions of people are on the brink of a new famine as the UN's Yemen response faces historic shortfalls. $1.5 billion is what the donor governments contributed, while the UN says it needs $3.2 billion to avert the crisis.
Those who provide aid, such as the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and America, have failed and did not abide by their pledges they made. They spent more than these sums to buy weapons, but they do not help Yemenis as they claim, which confirms the authenticity of the United Nations reports that famine is on the rise in Yemen.
The coronavirus pandemic, along with the funding crunch, has forced dozens of aid agencies and organizations working in Yemen to scale back their assistance. Some of them even had to give up their programs entirely, which has deteriorated the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, according to the UN. Famine can still be prevented if the international community wakes up to take serious action to save the lives of millions in Yemen, including women and the children. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The coordination Stop Global Security Law organized a new popular march for liberties and for justice all over France. The protesters want a total withdrawal of a law recently voted in the French Parliament that limits the possibility to film the police. They also denounce an authoritarian drift of the French government.
That authoritarian drift is evident. Look to the proposed laws. The existing legal framework in France is more than sufficient to control everything they want to. Why do they add new laws? It's only to limit more the freedom of expression and to sanction activists.
Trade unions say that the French government is taking advantage of the COVID-19 crisis to implement anti-social and austerity measures like the privatization of the health sector and the dismissal of workers.
They used the Terrorist Act and the health crisis as an alibi for restrictive measures. Since last week, the head of police has forbidden a demonstration in name of the COVID-19 crisis. This law has only one interest, to silence demonstrators.
Earlier this week, the Council of Ministers decided to close the main association against Islamophobia in France, the CCIF. French Interior Minister Darmanin qualified the CCIF as an enemy of the Republic and accused it of incitement to hatred and violence, discrimination, and of encouraging terrorism.
That's very surprising, because the CCIF has always profiled itself on the judicial scene and very little as political activists. The association limited itself to defend the legitimate rights of the Muslims. Now, in the context of an upsurge of terrorist attacks since 2015, the French government has entered in a phase of escalation of repressive measures that seriously limit the democratic liberties.
Amnesty International declared that dissolving the CCIF is a violation of freedom of association. As for now, the French government remains inflexible towards the social protest. But tensions are rising in high government circles about the way the security issue in France is handled. The protesters promise not to give up until an important part of the law is cancelled. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
Due to the coronavirus pandemic, the European Defence Agency annual conference has taken place online. The event, which has just concluded, normally attracts protests as it brings together arms dealers, policymakers and politicians, while civil society representatives are banned. The usual rhetoric was peddled out at this year's conference, however.
We have to look together into the rise of China and also these issues. Speaking of Russia, they have developed, and they are developing as we speak, super advanced missile systems.
Campaigners say the EU and NATO create security threats to feed the arms industry, which is active in every one of the EU's 27 nations and has an annual turnover of more than 100 billion euro. The ongoing process to create an EU army means that even more taxpayers' money is being spent at a time when COVID-19 is pushing millions of citizens into poverty.
For the first time, we invest 8 billion euros of EU budget money in cooperative defence R&D project.
Activists describe the EU's arms industry as immoral.
Exporting weapons to the Saudi-led coalition, which is waging war on Yemen. You have these huge amounts of money being made on the suffering of the Palestinian people.
Donald Trump's Make America Great Again slogan was mocked during the EU Defence Agency conference.
I very much hope that with Joe Biden we will have a partner in making, we have already started saying, making multilateralism great again.
The anti-war movement is suggesting those who believe we will have a more just world under Joe Biden's presidency should examine the history books. The Obama-Biden team ordered 10 times more airstrikes using drones than the previous U.S. administration under George W. Bush. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Protests in Pakistan against the UAE was unthinkable until recently. However, now it is not so unusual after the UAE diplomatically recognized the apartheid regime of Israel. The public sentiments against several Arab rulers rose in Pakistan after the UAE and Bahrain started aligning their foreign policies with Israel and India. The normalization of Israel's ties with the UAE and Bahrain is now affecting Islamabad's long-standing relation with some Arab rulers, particularly of Saudi Arabia and UAE. Citing unspecified security threats and rise in coronavirus cases, the UAE now has banned visit and work visas to Pakistani citizens, along with 13 other Muslim nations, most of whom have been angry with Abu Dhabi after it normalized ties with the Tel Aviv.
Countries like UAE receive such direct investment from investors from Israel and, for that matter, American Jewish community. Then obviously, the UAE government and the investors from Israel, or for that matter, USA, would be cautious about how the local population, for that matter, how the immigrants might react and respond to direct presence of the Israeli, or for that matter, American Jewish investors in countries like UAE.
Without revealing their names, Prime Minister Imran Khan in a recent interview dropped a hint that Saudi Arabia and the UAE have been pressurizing Islamabad to normalize its ties with Israel. Islamabad has vowed not to give diplomatic recognition to Israel. Over 5 million Pakistanis work in UAE and Saudi Arabia, the two biggest remittance-generating Arab states.
Pakistan's economy is dependent on these remittances. Saudi Arabia and UAE have the tools in their hands to put pressure on Pakistan to recognize Israel. Pakistan's nuclear power has always been a problem for Israel. So therefore, Israel would love that Pakistan should give recognition to it. That's why UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and other GCC countries want Pakistan to give recognition to Israel.
Political analysts say that Pakistan is running out of options, and in the current situation, it may inch closer to Turkey, Qatar, Iran, and more particularly to China to offset pressure from Saudi Arabia and UAE, which are strengthening their alliance with Israel, US, and India. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has targeted more Chinese companies, accusing them of having ties with the country's military. China's top chip maker, SMIC, and oil giant, China National Offshore Oil Corporation, as well as two other firms, have been added to the so-called blacklist of the U.S. Defense Department. This comes amid escalating tensions between the world's two top economies on multiple fronts. China has slammed the move, saying it firmly opposes what it calls Washington's wanton oppression of Chinese companies. Beijing says the measure will severely harm America's interest and image. A Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman also urged Washington to, quote, stop abusing its national power and national security concepts to surpass foreign companies. Over the past weeks, several Chinese companies have been blacklisted under an executive order signed by Trump. Washington and Beijing have been at loggerheads over a host of issues ranging from trade, technology, security, human rights to COVID-19. That all intensified when Trump took office in 2017, with his administration launching a trade war with China, leading to a tit-for-tat tariffs measures. Since then, key Chinese industries, including telecoms giants Huawei and ZTE, as well as several social media apps, have also been targeted under different pretexts. Washington has also used the issues of Hong Kong and Taiwan to put more pressure on China. Beijing has time and again accused Washington of seeking to destabilize mainland China by interfering in the affairs of Hong Kong and Taiwan, as well as fomenting tensions in the South China Sea. So why is the Trump administration keen on infuriating China? It seems the expanded blacklist is part of a bid to cement Trump's tough-on-China legacy before Democratic President-elect Joe Biden takes office on January the 20th.
I think this is definitely a part of a larger effort against China. The United States has to find another way of undermining China. Obviously, militarily, taking on China is a near impossible task. It would not be possible. The foot soldiers alone to occupy China just simply do not exist.
Relations between the world's two top economies have sunken to the lowest level since Trump's arrival in the White House. Just recently, even the Democrat-led House of Representatives passed a law to delist Chinese companies from stock exchange if they do not fully comply with the U.S. auditing rules, thus giving Trump one more tool to threaten Beijing before leaving office. But will Trump be able to inflict beyond repair damage to the Sino-US relationship remains to be seen.
A deal is imminent. These are the latest murmurings to leak from the Brexit negotiations between the United Kingdom and the European Union. As we approach the 11th hour, differences remain, but the reality of the circumstances are becoming ever clearer.
We are negotiating, and of course I follow closely the process of negotiation, but we will see in the next hours or in the next days what will be on the table, and we will need to assess the situation. And this will be a question at the end of the negotiation. We need to decide, the member states, they will need to decide. Like the British side, we will need to say yes or no, and the member states will say yes or no.
If progress is made, all 27 member states have to agree and ratify the deal in the European Parliament. France, however, have been very vocal. If the deal does not suit them, they will veto the agreement and send both sides into a no-deal outcome.
France is committed to our interests. We need to prepare ourselves for a no-deal, meaning that on December 31st, we would no longer have free movement and free access to the British market and vice versa. But that's not what we desire. Negotiations are continuing as we speak, but I also want to tell our fishermen, our companies, and our citizens we will not accept a bad deal. If the deal does not correspond with our interests, we will oppose it.
While many see such sentiments as negotiating tactics, some believe France actually wants a no-deal outcome. Economically, they will be affected, but it will be the UK that will feel the impact the hardest. France still has free trade with Europe and all nations that have trade agreements with the Union. The UK, however, will be limited to World Trade Organization tariffs. In this way, a no-deal outcome gives France the opportunity to fill the void left by the UK, who will find themselves increasingly isolated. A no-deal can also lead to the breakup of the United Kingdom. This will significantly impact the global standing of Westminster, who have recently been overtaken by India in the global order of world economies. Economic forecasts put the UK at the bottom of the G7, with the pandemic having impacted the UK economy more than its neighbours. In this vein, a deal that will protect jobs and livelihoods is now more vital than sentiment and ideology.
A roundup of headlines from the past week in the United States. In Los Angeles, murders in 2020 are the highest in a decade. In Atlanta, murders are the highest in 30 years. Chicago just reported homicides are up 54% this year and 73% month over month from November 2019, showing that neither cold weather nor the second wave of coronavirus is stopping the absolutely devastating record homicide wave. The murders are almost totally confined to the poorest ghettos, mainly populated by African and Latino American citizens, and are mostly in urban areas, which usually have Democrat mayors.
I think it's bipartisan. When we have violence among the underclass, that's something that everyone's tolerated in the country for too long. We have one party that embraces gun rights, which happens incidentally to not be the urban party, and then we have another party that's very kind of gun phobic. But neither party gets to the root, and the root of it is insecurity.
Many believe the most basic function of any type of government is to provide physical security. Many also say that the tolerance of gang wars, shootouts with no consequences, and an underclass which essentially suffers from de facto segregation is a reflection of America's endlessly violent national history and foreign policy.
When you sow insecurity and violence and use violence as a method of settling disputes, then the same thing comes home. You can't cause havoc all over the world and drop bombs on 10 countries and not expect to have some retribution at home. So I think that we need to demilitarize our police. I think we need to demilitarize our society. I think we need to demilitarize our foreign policy.
Nationwide, aggravated assaults have skyrocketed about a third as high as homicides. total crime numbers, including robbery, sex assault, theft, burglary, and murder, are down just 7% in places like Chicago in 2020, providing scant compensation for such widespread loss of life and increased feelings of insecurity. Many nations have kept their schools open despite coronavirus, but across the U.S., schools have mostly been shuttered, causing a rise in juvenile violence. About 350 children have been shot so far this year in Chicago alone. Perhaps because of the coronavirus and the highly disputed presidential election, the record wave of murders has flown under the radar of the national media, but they have devastated poor urban communities and will require years of healing, reconciliation, and investment. Rami Mazahari, Chicago.
Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs Javad Zarif attended the sixth edition of the Rome-Med Mediterranean Dialogues Conference, which is being held in a digital format from November 25 to December 4. This year, the initiative, promoted by the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and by ISPI, the Italian Institute for International Political Studies, has been focused on the topic Beyond COVID-19, Navigating Solutions for Post-Pandemic Times, featuring over 100 experts and political leaders. In his address, Zarif touched upon a number of issues of international relevance, spurred on by questions from Eli Gerenmayer from the European Council of Foreign Relations and Paolo Magri, Executive Vice President of ISPI, the top diplomat, opened with an update on the coronavirus crisis in Iran.
The situation in Iran is pretty bad. Unfortunately, we're suffering from something more than the rest of the world is, and that is an economic war. This is way beyond restrictions. The United States even prevents us from using our own money in different countries to pay COVAX for the vaccine. If they say otherwise, they're simply lying.
Later, the discussion shifted on the nuclear deal signed in Vienna in 2015.
Earlier this week, some of Europe's leading diplomats urged the members of the E3, France, Germany and the UK, to act quickly to set out a roadmap for Iran and the US to return to compliance with the JCPOA. There's a real risk, experts say, that the efforts can be disrupted by those forces who have been working hard to escalate tensions between Tehran and Washington.
The Europeans have not been able to implement their part of the deal. The Europeans say that we are in full compliance. They're simply not. Implementation compliance means that they have to have effects for these actions. And we don't see an effect. We don't see any European company in Iran. We do not see any European country buying oil from Iran.
Zarif also commented on the assassination in a terrorist attack near the Iranian capital Tehran of prominent nuclear physicist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. The future of the Iran nuclear deal will also be discussed with the European Union High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell on Friday, the final day of the conference.